Glad you're feeling better than you were here last time.
Much better.
Next case is Genband US versus Metaswitch Networks, 2018-1869. Mr. Verhoeven.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. The plaintiff in this case elected to try seven different patents from five families in a five-day trial. That was their election to do that. The results of the trial demonstrate that there's no substantial evidence for five of the seven patents with respect to clear claim elements, which of course as a matter of law requires a finding of non-infringement. In addition, we have appealed, Your Honor, because the district court judge made claim construction rulings during and after the trial that are unsupported, and we'll go through. We brief through those. Two of the patents also suffer from patent eligibility problems under Section 101, and then finally, two of the patents have means plus function claims where there's just a black box and no disclosure. Let me take as an example the 658 patent. This is the one with the computer languages. I call it the interworking patent. So first and foremost, this patent is not patent eligible under Section 101. All it claims is one language, one person has one language, another person has another language, and a third person, the interworking agent, which could be a human being, uses a common language that both understand to do the translation. And the only thing in addition to that is they pass through stuff that doesn't translate unaltered. That's a plain abstract idea that's been around forever. Using a common language to help translate between two other languages is not eligible for patent protection. In addition to that, the one thing they might point to as being unique, which we disagree with, is that they pass through these unmatched translations without alteration. We don't do that. The accused products do not pass through unmatched translation items without alteration. The undisputed evidence.
I'm sorry. Is on that question, which is an infringement question, is this the one in which there is a dispute about the interpretation of? I forget whether it's testimony or a document about.
It was Mr. Rowland's testimony.
Something that you say that something is dropped before it's passed through. They say it's passed through and then potentially dropped.
Yes, that's Mr. Rowland's testimony.
And are we talking about the same?
Mr. Rowland testified very clearly that if there is no match, if the parameters do not, this is at appendix 1919 through 20, parameters that do not map from the first protocol to the second protocol, quote, will just be discarded. And what the plaintiff, and I'll let them argue about it, Your Honor, but what the plaintiff is doing is they're taking, going into the weeds and trying to create something that doesn't exist. And I'm not going to try and interpret it because I have a hard time understanding what they're even saying. But Mr. Rowland clearly testified that if it doesn't match, it's discarded. It's not passed through without alteration. And there's no evidence that we do that. We just don't do it. And so, yeah, 101 and the fact that there's no evidence as to one of the main claim elements as to this patent requires a reversal here. The 658 patent is the 561 patent is another one, another example. This patent also suffers from patent eligibility problem.
Doesn't it claim a firewall?
Claims a firewall, yeah. Firewalls have been around. But the abstract idea, even as said by the court, is receiving a stream of incoming packets and then applying the packets to either an application proxy or a packet filter. The patent itself, at column 1, lines 12 through 40, acknowledges that application proxies and packet filters were well-known prior art components. So what you're talking about is you got three streams. You got the signal channel, the media channel, and the control channel. So you got streams of these three channels coming in, and you either apply it to one proxy, well-known proxy, or another well-known proxy. This is not anything other than just some abstract idea that you take streams and apply them to proxies. That's it. There's nothing else in the actual claim. There's not some abstraction of that concept. And then here, too, we have no evidence as to the control channel. So the claims require a signaling channel, a media channel, and a control channel. There's no control channel in any of our systems. If you look at the evidence presented to the jury, the accused product is the Perimeter product. It clearly shows there's only two channels, the signaling channel and the media channel. And signaling channels and media channels, by the way, have been around forever because of the obvious utility in taking your content, which is massive, in one channel, and your signaling, which is exponentially smaller, in a different channel, because you want to process them in different ways. So,
didn't the other side have evidence that the same component was in fact performing?
Let me address that. Yes,
providing both channels.
That's very interesting. Prior to cross examination at trial, their expert's name is Mr. Beckman. So, Mr. Beckman admitted that there were only two channels and not a third channel. In fact, I will.
My recollection when I read that testimony, which you cited right at the beginning of that portion of your brief, is that he did not actually say that.
He said, one second.
He said something close, but close is actually the key distinction here, because the key distinction, I think, was that both channels can be provided by the same, let's call it a component.
Well, the claim construction for applying all packets, Your Honor, as construed by the court, is, quote, applying, comma, for the setup, duration, and takedown of the real-time internet action, application, all IP packets associated with the bearer channel to the packet filter. Now, you don't usually see all in patent claims. That's because the patent office rejected all of this based on prior art. And the only way they got around it was saying that all of the packets have to make it through. But going back to setting aside, let's assume you're right, Your Honor, that there isn't a change of testimony. The first time that Beckman testified about a single channel and that you could combine signaling and channel into a single multiplex channel was on cross-examination, throwaway speculation, trying to defend himself because the evidence he presented on direct clearly didn't show that all IP packets are applied.
Sometimes cross-examination produces evidence the questioner might not.
Simply say, well, it could be multiplexed into a single channel is not substantial evidence. That is, you're talking about some sort of possibility He didn't go in there and say that had happened in the accused products. He didn't go in and present any evidence that for the setup, duration, and takedown of the application that this is happening in a multiplex situation. There's no evidence. I mean, it's not just saying, well, you could multiplex and therefore I've proved infringement. You have to look at the product. You have to show evidence to support your position, and he just didn't do so here.
What's the difference between a control and a signal?
The claim language expressly, well, let me step back. We treated it as plain and ordinary meaning. So there's no construction, unless I'm wrong, I think so, as to control channel. Let me double check to make sure I'm right. There is one construction, though, that's very important, is that a channel is a stream of packets. And I'll explain why that's important in a second. But I'm sorry, I forgot your question.
I wanted to understand what the difference is in a common sense way between a signal channel and a control channel. It seems to me a control channel is carrying signals to exercise control. So what are the signals in the non-control signal channel?
That's the problem I have, too, with the claim. The claim itself refers to this control channel, and it says it's separate. So you have three channels. It clearly says that. That's what it's claiming. And to say we've shown infringement with only two channels when it claims three channels is to vitiate the third channel. And because when we're talking about channels, we're talking about things coming in through packets, a stream of packets. There's only two channels where that happens. It's undisputed in the evidence, signaling and media.
Can you address the exclusion of your demonstrative?
Yes. Thank you for asking about that. This is related to the 279 and the 589 patents. Our main non-infringement argument on these patents was that the thing that Beckman pointed to for the control element of these patents was an invite, and that an invite is not the command element. So many patents, hard to keep straight. The invite is not a command. We previously disclosed this position in our expert reports. We had two rounds of claim construction, two rounds, where the parties presented what they wanted to have interpreted. And nobody presented, neither side presented a special interpretation of commands. We just said plain and ordinary meaning. So what do we have now? What happened is no mention that command should be not given its plain and ordinary meaning. Then we have, the day of our expert's testimony.
Right, first of all, you cross-examine their expert to kind of make the point a SIP invite is not really.
I did a setup.
And then your expert comes in with, I don't know, 150 or something demonstratives. Is that what's in the packet? A very large number.
Well, the objection was to a substantive argument that we made.
Well, it was specifically an objection to particular demonstratives. And then, as the judge later explained, his rejection of it seemed to be on the ground that it was making a claim construction point that was incorrect, right? And therefore...
Yes, the judges... Go ahead, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Right, and therefore, even though all that he technically did was refuse to allow you to use the demonstrative, you treat that as an exclusion of evidence.
He precluded us from arguing that an invite is not a control. He said, you cannot argue that.
Where did he say
it in chambers. Well, and I asked, and we asked him.
Right, but then...
He said, we've got to put this on the record.
Right, he did.
And it's clearly he's talking about... I'll read it to you. This is I don't have the site here, but it's from the court's ruling. Quote, the court ruled on those disputed demonstratives based on the express language in the order set forth as 135. That's the second claim construction order. Particularly, I call to the attention of the parties the sentence on page 36, which states, subquote, further, the specification discloses, for example, that the control system may transmit commands to the telephony device merely to notify it of status. And so based on that one sentence in the specification in an in-chambers conference before our expert was just about to testify about his main non-infringement argument, the judge said you can't do it.
Counsel, you want to save some time for rebuttal, which is just about gone. But let's hear from the other side, and we'll give you 3 minutes of rebuttal time.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Kubail.
Good morning, Your Honors. Doug Kubail on behalf of Genband. May it please the court. Genband brought this case because of widespread infringement by its direct competitor, Metaswitch. The jury did found that five patent families were infringed. There is substantial evidence supporting that jury's finding, and Metaswitch hasn't carried its clear and convincing burden of invalidating the patents. I'd like to start with the 658 patent that counsel for Metaswitch started with, and this idea of parameters that are passed without alteration. The jury heard evidence from Mr. Rowland. He was Metaswitch's corporate representative on this issue. He was a director of engineering for the products that we're talking about. He gave testimony at Appendix 1920, where he was asked the question, for parameters that don't map from the first protocol to the second protocol, what happens to those? And he very, very clearly explained that's a two-part answer. The first thing that happens is some of those parameters might get used by the first protocol, and then they're not useful anymore, so they're discarded. But then he said there's a second part of the answer as well. And the second part shows infringement. For those parameters that are not used and discarded, he testified that those parameters are passed to the second protocol agent and actually put into memory where the second protocol agent can read them. And it's only after they've been passed through, unaltered, and read by the second protocol agent that they can then be discarded if they're not useful at that point. But he testified very clearly that parameters, it's not only capable of passing these parameters unaltered, that's in fact what it's designed to do and what it does do. With respect to the second patent that was talked about, the 561 patent and the control channels, it is not accurate that Dr. Beckman didn't address the control channels until cross-examination. During his direct examination, he explained, using Plaintiff's Exhibit 522, which is not addressed in their opening appeal brief, and kind of surprisingly, because this was squarely addressed in the Rule 50 motions, they made the same argument that he hadn't addressed this issue, and it was pointed out, and the district court agreed, that he relied specifically on Exhibit Plaintiff's Exhibit 522, which was a Metaswitch document, to show that when Metaswitch uses the term signaling information, it's talking about two things. It's talking about both call control information, and it's also talking about call signaling information.
Can you now just add two sentences to explain to me what the difference is?
Just
what's control information and what's signaling information?
Sure. In the Metaswitch, the patent doesn't give specifics about the differences between those two. In the Metaswitch document, it explains that call control information is information to, for example, set up the call. Call signaling information can be used for things like quality of service determinations during the call.
Okay. Can you, would you mind switching to, I guess, two topics that are of particular interest?
Yes, Judge.
This is Metaswitch.
Right. I should be standing up. So one is what happened on the SIP invite is not command. And the other, which Mr. Verhoeven didn't get to, but I guess I'm quite interested in, which is the indefiniteness of the 112F. Claim in the language in the 427 and 984. Let's start with the SIP invite is not command.
Yes, Judge Toronto. Metaswitch is complaining about a ruling that simply did not happen. There was no ruling saying you may not make this argument. As Your Honor asked, can you show me in the record where that ruling was made? No such ruling was made. There is not a ruling in the record saying your expert is precluded from testifying that a SIP invite cannot be a command.
But when the only reason given by the district court, kind of after the fact, just recording what had been done in the unrecorded chambers conference, the only reason given is, I'm going to summarize, I think that's contrary to the proper meaning of the claim. At that point, why isn't the exclusion of the demonstrative an equivalent to the exclusion of evidence?
Well, Your Honor, I guess I'd first start with we would need a record on which to determine what was it that was excluded. We don't have in the record the demonstratives. There was no offer of proof made as to what is it that you want to
say. I thought I read the demonstrative.
There are demonstratives that were put into the appendix that were not in the record below. Those are not part of the appeal record.
But there's no dispute about what the demonstrative said. And I mean, that is, it was to say a SIP invite is not a command. And the judge said, the reason I excluded that is that, as I explained briefly in my claim construction order, there's a passage in the patent that uses the word command to refer to something other than I'm telling you what to do, rather, but to mere notification.
There definitely is a dispute about that, Your Honor. If you're willing to go outside of the record and look at the appendix with respect to the email that went to the court and the demonstratives that went to the court, there were two particular demonstratives that were objected to. That was numbers 37 and 38.
Right.
And what you see on those demonstratives is no reference to SIP invites. What they were trying to do was to make a claim construction argument that a command in the patent was something that was mutually exclusive from a message. That issue had been dealt with in claim construction, where it was argued that a command could not be a message. A command must be something that commands an entity. And the court had pointed to the patent specification, where it noted that a command is something as simple as a notification of status. So what the court did in terms of the demonstratives is said, you're not going to put up a demonstrative that suggests that in the patent, a command and a message are two mutually exclusive things. But he made no ruling with respect to any demonstratives that had SIP invite on it. That's not in the record, and that didn't happen. And that's kind of the whole problem we're dealing with here, Your Honors, is that no offer of proof was made as to any of this. And so we've got attorney argument after the fact saying, well, gee, I wish I would have argued this, and I would have done this, and I would have done that. And that's the whole reason that we have an offer of proof requirement. There was a cross-examination that was made on the point, and it's Metaswitch's job to say, well, what is it? What is it that you would have put into evidence that's different than what was in the cross? What specifically was excluded, and what would you have said? They had an opportunity to do that, and they didn't do that. We don't have an appeal record.
You said which exhibit, which demonstrative was?
Demonstrative number 37 and demonstrative number 38 are the specific ones.
Right, so 38 expressly refers to SIP.
Let me make sure I'm
this is on page appendix 6011. This is volume three. I don't know if that's an invite in SIP or just something else in SIP.
So 6010 and 6011. So you can see that the argument they wanted to make on 6011 was underlying the word command on one side, and over on the other side, the word messages.
Right.
And it had been argued in claim construction that a message was something mutually exclusive from a command. One can't be the other. That had been argued, that had been rejected. And so this slide, re-arguing that a command and a message are mutually exclusive, was contrary to what the court already had taken up in claim construction. And he...
Well, I guess I'm trying to understand whether your argument is, even if the judge did essentially preclude the expert from testifying, contrary to what he viewed as the claim construction. There was no error in that because the judge's claim construction was in fact correct. That is, you cannot say that a mere message, including a SIP invite, is not a command.
That is definitely part of the argument, Your Honor. There certainly is no harm here because the claim construction argument that they wanted to put forward, which was that messages and commands are mutually exclusive, is contrary to the patent. It directly contradicts the specification. So the first level of the argument is we don't have an offer of proof. We don't have an order from which to appeal with respect to the issue of did the court order that you may not say that an invite is not a command. He didn't order that. Secondly, if he had done that, it's harmless. Number one, because they were allowed to cross-examine on that point, and there's certainly no offer of proof made as to what, in addition to the cross-examination, did you want to accomplish there. And then third, as we've just talked about, the argument that a command and a message are mutually exclusive and one can't be the other was contrary to the claim construction. And contrary to the patent specification, which specifically says that a mere notification of status can be a command.
Yeah, can you talk about packetization module? So as I understand it, you did not have evidence of ordinary usage of that term outside the scope of the patent that would mean that it was a structural term itself and therefore wholly outside 112F. And the judge said, this is a nonce term, so we're in 112F. And when I look in the spec, I see two things, only one of which you rely on. That is, one thing I see is a box with a bunch of specifics in it, but you don't in fact assert that that's the structure that corresponds to the term. And then the other thing I see is a box with the name packetization module on it, and that doesn't actually do anything that the nonce term doesn't do either.
So, Your Honor, what we rely on is the text associated with Figure 5. So you've referred to Figure 5 in a box, but there's text associated with that figure. That text runs from column 13, line 36, to line 17, line 56. The recitation of the claimed function appears at Appendix 96, and I won't reread that into the record, but there's a specific function that the packetization module is to accomplish.
I'm sorry, so I'm looking at the 427, is that, or what?
Yes, Your Honor. If you're in the appendix, it would be Appendix 463. It starts at 1336, and in particular, what the court relied on was, I believe, at 1346 through 55. And there it's explained that in this particular embodiment, the packetization module is implemented on a separate printed circuit board.
So my recollection from your brief is that that's the only thing that you relied on, what the module sits on, which doesn't seem to need to tell us anything about what the module, what the internal structure of the module.
I would disagree that the printed circuit board is something that the module sits on. The way that they've articulated is that this black box sits on top of this thing called a printed circuit board. But the printed circuit board, it's not just a blank slab of silicone. It's a printed circuit board. It has the circuitry on it. It is the packetization module.
Okay, well, sitting on top then is not the right language. But rather, to say that it is embodied in printed circuitry on the board doesn't tell you anything about the structure of that circuitry.
It tells you, so columns 13 through 17 talk about the function of the module, and 1346 explains that that functionality is carried out on a printed circuit board. And there's actually different embodiments in the patent. There's an embodiment where it doesn't have to be on a separate printed circuit board. For example, A465, column 17, line 53, discusses where multiple functionalities can happen on the circuit boards. the separate printed circuit board is a specific structural embodiment of the packetization module that's different than other embodiments.
And I trust you do not rely on item 110 in figure 6.
Sure, let me describe the difference.
Because that actually has stuff in it.
So in figure 5 describes that there's multiple embodiments you can have. You can have a packetization module that handles multiple different protocols, or you could have separate packetization modules that each handle one protocol. Figure 5 allows for both. Figure 6 describes a specific embodiment where the packetization module handles one protocol. That's what's described in the text for Figure 6. So Figure 6 is an embodiment that falls within what is described in Figure 5, but Figure 5 is not limited to just that embodiment in Figure 6. Those are two different. Figure 5 describes both embodiments in text. Figure 6 shows one of those embodiments in the figure. And then Figure 6 doesn't go on.
And I assume you didn't say item 110 in Figure 6 is the corresponding structure, because you can't say that the accused products have an equivalent to that. In any event, you don't seem to have said it in your brief here.
That wasn't addressed at trial because that was not the claim construction. The claim construction was packetization module of Figure 5, as described with respect to Figure 5.
Do you have a final thought, Mr. Kubiel?
I am happy to answer any questions your honors have. This is an important case for us. We are direct competitors. We worked very hard to establish infringement in this case. We did that. The jury found it. We think this court should affirm in full.
We will work very hard to decide the case.
Thank you, Judge Lurie.
Properly. Mr. Verhoeven, why don't you take 3 minutes?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Let me start with indefiniteness and Judge Toronto's questions about Figure 6. The reason they don't point to Figure 6 is because we don't infringe Figure 6, and we don't have, the accused products don't have those elements in them, whether you deem them structurally sufficient or not. Before this court, the only argument that's being made is that Figure 5 discloses the structure, and obviously Figure 5 is just a black box. You heard counsel admit the specification he was referring to was a functional description, and the only thing they could point to is the printed circuit board argument. But that can't provide sufficient structural disclosure.
Have we said somewhere that a circuit is itself a structural term? Rejected the idea that that is not a 112F term?
I'm not aware of the court saying that, Your Honor. Williamson is important here. And Williamson, when talking about whether or not the structure someone points to is sufficient, says that the structure has to be, quote, adequate corresponding structure to perform all of the claimed functions. And there's nothing in there about structure to perform the claimed functions. And as the Robert Bosch case we cited says, that in that case they try to point to connections to the black box, which is basically what they're doing now. Printed circuit boards, as you heard him say, is on the supposed structure is on top of that. Well, in Bosch, they said you can't point to connections to the structure and say that's sufficient structure. There's nothing identifying the structure that actually performed the claimed function. And that's what we have here. We don't even know if the structure is a hardware component or a software module. There's no disclosure of it. It's indefinite. I have 46 seconds on invite control. We did everything we could to take that in chambers ruling and put it on the record. We asked the judge to. He was very irritated when we did it.
Why is the ruling incorrect? if it's correct, then it doesn't really matter if...
Well, first of all, we had no opportunity to brief or argue or anything. But secondly, the only
thing... I thought it was briefed during the claim construction proceeding.
No.
Whether message, a message...
Command, that is wrong.
Command. Okay.
No. Control, let's see, what are we on here? Invite control. Control was never construed. Both parties relied command. On its plain and ordinary meaning.
Command.
Command. I am so sorry. It's the second time. Both sides relied on its plain and ordinary meaning. And the only thing the judge relied... This isn't about admission of demonstratives. He told us, you cannot argue. Your expert cannot argue. I can't argue in closing that an invite is not a command. I can't even make the argument. That was his ruling. And it was a claim construction ruling. You heard from counsel, well, there's no offer of proof. Offer of proof on a claim construction ruling? This isn't about putting in evidence what the evidence would show. It's clear error by the judge ruling in chambers, denying us our main non-infringement argument.
Is that ruling on the record?
We tried to get it on the record. And one thing I'll note that's ironic is that they did not challenge the preservation of this issue in response to our Rule 50 motions. So the irony is they waived this argument because they didn't make it in the Rule 50s. They didn't make it in the Rule 50s because everybody in this trial knew what the judge's ruling was. And the ruling was a claim construction ruling. And when I asked the court to point to something, he pointed to one sentence in the specification for the basis of his ruling that does not support the notion that an invite, it doesn't even mention invites. Really quickly, if I can, Your Honors, a very important point on this is that Genvan now admits in his appeal arguments that it is advancing a construction that, quote, is not as narrow as the dictionary definition of commands, close quote. So all the way up to trial, plain and ordinary meeting, we get sandblasted with the, you can't make your main argument the day of the testimony. And now they're saying, well, because they concede apparently that command, plain and ordinary meeting, would not include invite, they're saying that the judge's ruling was made command not as narrow, in other words, broadened the word command beyond its plain and ordinary meaning.
Thank you, counsel.
That is there. Thank you very much.
We have your argument. We'll take the case under advisement.
All rise.